Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the joys and the griefs, the risks and rewards of being a dad. I'm Stephen Amaya. This episode is in a way a cry for help, albeit a very gentle one. For quite some time now, Father Figures has been on the lookout for a local father of a child with a disability. As you may know, I am the father of a child with a disability, and it's been my desire to have such a dad on the show to share the dad experience with, other than with the father of a typical kid. Now, there are some deep potholes on this road, and they go on as far as the eye can see. It can be a lonely drive, and it's lasted exactly half my life. It's a delicate balance, somewhere in between heroism and a pity party. In order to remedy this deficit, I've enlisted the services of my wife, Jennifer, who serves as the interviewer in this episode, wherein she asks me about my role as a father.
I'd like to jump in then with my first question, and that is, you know, after the nurses at the regular hospital noticed our daughter would turn blue periodically, and then she was whisked away and transported to Children's Hospital. After the tests and such, do you remember receiving the diagnosis?
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember you and I were in a small room at the hospital, no windows. And the door opened and in walked Dr. Snodgrass, who we found out was a great doctor. And he very matter-of-factly came in and looked at us and said, well, she had a stroke. And just those words, she had a stroke, four words changed my life forever. It was like buying a ticket to Paris and ending up in Minsk.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of grief. Nothing was funny to me for about a year.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up finding strength that you didn't even know you had in those first few days? Or were you just flying the plane?
I was flying the airplane. I you know, trying to find a place to land. It was, I was stunned, and I was the walking wounded. I remember asking for medication to calm me. And this doctor gave me this little tiny dosage of a little tiny pill, and it did absolutely nothing.
And it was a bigger thing than that.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And in the early days, I mean, I eventually had to go back to work, and you were the stay-at-home parent.
I was.
It was a very brave thing to do. And in those earliest days, before the schooling started, mm-hmm. and it was just you and she at home in that tiny little bungalow, what were those days like?
Because of her disability, which is cerebral palsy and epilepsy, because of her diagnosis, we stayed close to home. She had a heart monitor and a breathing monitor, and we had to strap it onto her at night. And it had an alarm when one of the electrodes would come loose, and it was just...
You were in a very small space, even physically and sort of socially, emotionally.
Socially and emotionally, certainly I was isolated, and that was very difficult.
And this was early days of stay-at-home dads, so
yes.
What's this guy doing?
You know? Right,
yeah.
Right. And, you know, one thing I noticed... in the world of mommies, is that mommies can call up other mommies and say, hey, come over for coffee. But mommies don't do that with daddies.
It's awkward. It's different unless everybody knows everybody and all of that. And it's difficult, especially before you even get into the school years.
Yeah.
You're really just hanging out, the two of you.
Yeah.
Did you find that you were falling in love with your daughter, even in the shadow of not knowing what was in the future?
Oh, yeah. My interest to make her sociable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the early days when we were in the small cottage, it was easy to be close to her. And, you know, we didn't have a big yard where she would go running and or jump in a lake or something. It was actually, the place was so idyllic that it was easy to raise her there. We did some funny videos and, you know, that sort of thing. But the most debilitating part was the social isolation of being in a world of mommies.
You know, our parents were of an even earlier generation. You and I are talking about a time that was in the early 90s. And then we have our parents who are from that earlier generation still, when there was far less inclusion of people with disabilities. And did you find that a factor? Like, was your father a help to you in, you know, this sudden big diagnosis that was going to be with her the rest of her life?
Was my father
of help to you?
Of help to me?
Because he certainly grew up at a time when...
Mm-hmm. I'm tempted to say no, only because that was his trend. That was his way of, you know... He wasn't very supportive or engaging.
So if your father wasn't particularly of, you know, strength or fallback for you, it felt like you and I, pretty much held each other up.
Yes.
It seems like.
Yes.
And then she was just such a delight that I think she carried us along.
Oh, yeah. She was a really happy kid.
Very happy.
Yeah.
Very happy. And it was such a joy to, as we saw her, you know, proceed through her first year of life, that she could laugh.
Yeah.
That was the most important thing.
Yeah.
I remember asking, will she laugh?
Yeah.
You know, so.
That got me laughing again, too.
Yes, that did help. Yeah. Well, when you were in school as a child, now that's going back even more generations.
Mm-hmm.
So the 60s, 70s.
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember? What was your first memories of school and children and disabilities?
Yeah.
And what was that like where you were living?
The kids with disabilities were farmed out to a temporary classroom on the edge of the playground. And we only saw them when they arrived and when they left. But, you know, they were outcast. And they were not included in anything. And I'm sure there were some fantastic people in that group, you know?
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And so you saw them out on a perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And did that fear come back that now maybe your daughter would be sadly
like that
outcast? And
yeah, I don't think so. I think by that time I knew she was with it.
Oh,
know?
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's certainly, you know, when you're in that original unknown, those first years,
mm-hmm.
where you aren't sure what all is going to happen.
Yeah.
Everything is a dreaded mystery until you can get to some good light and some good answers.
And then the alarms go off.
That darn apnea monitor, yes, yeah.
That was awful.
Well, it became a fourth member of the family because it had to go everywhere with us.
I would hang it on the stroller and it would weigh a ton.
Well, it was there. Kind of a flashing light all the time in the background, really.
Yeah.
I think you had mentioned that the architecture at the schoolyard then became kind of a metaphor, that there's these set-aside people.
Yeah, there was the real world, and then there was the disabled world, which is in the corner of the playground.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was separating.
When you're a stay-at-home dad, and the school year comes and it's time to enroll, you go back to school too, don't you?
I remember our daughter was sick in bed, our bed, and I was in the next room working. And I hear her throw up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pick her up to clean her up and put her in the bathtub. And she starts rhythmically moving. And her eyes go up and to the right. And she's rigid. And, you know, so anyway, that was an epileptic seizure. And I called the paramedics. And they came and took her to the hospital. And
I think you're referring to her first grand mal seizure.
Yes, that was her first grand mal seizure. And it lasted an hour and a half. And that probably did something to her.
It also was a turning point in our lives because we weren't sure if the brain scar was going to produce seizures all the time or not. And we had come off of the original medication from being a baby, and now she was about 4 or 5. And we thought, well, maybe her brain will normalize even with this scarring. And it was from that point on that we knew we could never be out of earshot.
Yeah.
We could never go on a long freeway drive where we were not immediately able to seek and receive medical help, because this was life-threatening to her.
Yeah.
And that changed our lives tremendously. No airline flights. Yeah. We didn't go anywhere quite a while.
In fact, the day of that first grand mal seizure was going to be the first date we had in 4 years.
Yes, it was.
And so we had agreed with the lady across the street, you know, to watch her. And I can't imagine what that would have been like for her having a grand mal seizure and we're, you know, out.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it was nature just sending a message, and we stayed so tight as a unit. I think for, probably the next 10 years, we really didn't separate. We really didn't go anywhere, you and I. And and you just never knew, so you kind of lived on edge all the time.
Yeah.
Now that you were out socially, outside the bungalow, and in the world of social situations.
Well, it was extremely rare for someone to play with her. You know, it's hard to think of people who want to play with a disabled kid. You know, it just doesn't happen in the world. Well, it happens in the world rarely, but and more nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody came over to ask her to play, you know. So, you know, she had to contend with her own isolation. And I think she's handled it well.
Yes. She did go on to make friends.
But have you noticed that the majority of those friends are also kids with disabilities?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? That's actually very interesting because you know, you might immediately jump to this feeling like, oh, darn. But actually, it's someone that understands something about you that nobody else can.
Yeah.
And you can talk about what's eating at your heart with someone who's not going to judge you in the same ways, maybe, you know, that others would. And so I'm glad that those friends have stayed, that everyone's still in the area, and that she can have those friendships. You know, some have gone to get married, and many of them don't drive, and our daughter does. So she loves being their friend and helping them in ways that takes her out of the mix of needing stuff. She actually can be a provider. And that's rather rich. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's an important part.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have noticed that. And it actually makes quite good sense.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a structure there that I think lifts them up.
Yeah.
You know, she always presented as a late bloomer, but there's a phrase that says the last bloom to open is usually the most beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. So we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm confident we're still able to help her, so we'll get there. Let's see. Is there something you'd want other parents to know when they're around a social situation with a disabled child that is in the group but kind of not in the group? Like, how best to approach and actually, you know?
Yeah, I would just treat them as normally and typically as any other kid.
Yeah.
And what their response is their response. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Speak to them, not about them.
Yeah, not above them, not below them.
Right, you know? Right. Everybody's got something going on, so.
There's a spectrum, and it's very wide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's some kind of just luck out there in life, and some people are luckier than others?
Yeah, absolutely. Luck has so much to do with where you end up in life. Yeah.
It's hard not to compare.
Yes.
Or want.
Yes.
Something better for your child.
Yeah.
Do you think you missed out on being the father you thought you were going to be when you got off that plane and now you're a father in Minsk?
The funny thing is, if you had known me when I was in high school and you'd asked me, you know, I really wanted to be a father. From a young age, I wanted to be a father. With the superstition, I think it's like some power somewhere has recognized that I can do it. But, you know, that feeling is there. I'd been watched for years and years and was selected for this job. It's weird.
It is. It's a job you don't put your hand up for, but once you do it, you learn something that many other people do not know.
Yeah.
That is actually so rich and deep when you see the success of your child in ways that are quite different from measurements used by others.
Yes.
Typical children measurements. And it's almost like the child you lost in that dream comes back to you bit by bit, moment by moment, or achievement by achievement.
Yeah, there were a couple of things that
She played football.
She did play football. She played down the line. And
only female on the team?
Only female on the team, only female in the league. And they gave her a special play. It was flag football. And they gave her a special play. It was a throw to her in the end zone, and she got a touchdown. And that
because the other team, the last thing they were thinking was
they're
going to throw it to the girl.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, those are the trade-offs. You know, those moments are pretty awesome. And they stand out in ways I imagine are just as grand as parents that have typical kids doing wonderful things, too.
Yeah.
So even though some of that dream feels interrupted, you woke up too early and, oh, my gosh, here we are now.
Yeah.
There were lots of wonderful things happening. I know you love flying. And you and she developed a special routine.
Yeah. I do love flying. I wanted to be a pilot when I was a little boy. And I pursued it. And after she was born, I couldn't fly anymore, of course. But we did take a flight. She and I, we got an instructor. And we got in a Cessna 172 and we flew around where we live, and the neighbors waved at us from the ground, and she got to fly the plane. And that was a thrill. On the other hand, after that, she became very interested in flying. And she asked me, she said, I've decided I want to be a pilot. And I had to say no for safety reasons. And that broke my heart, knowing how much I loved flying.
It's wonderful to know that that connection, although she couldn't pursue that particular stream of work, even to this day, when she's working through a difficulty emotionally, she drives herself out to the airport and sits along, parks along the runway where there's a spot you can listen to the dispatchers.
The controllers, yeah.
And that's her place of calm.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you may have had to stop the physical part of flying, but I think you still gave her another type of flying, which is knowing how to take care of yourself. And
She does go there to think things out, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good place for it.
You had to develop a different fathering style because of all these challenges and extra layers of work and all of that, things you couldn't have envisioned. And it is hard to discipline a child with special needs sometimes because there's a weird balance of you didn't mean to do it, but you did it, but I got to kind of domesticate things here.
Yeah.
So in general, how do you feel when you see life just going on and there are typical children out there, and after seeing how far she's come, how far you've come in fathering in this situation of which you had no experience whatsoever, and your willingness to be an at-home dad and be present for her, to let her be the priority, I remember how astonished the neurologists were at Children's Hospital.
Yes. Yes, they were putting up x-rays of
MRIs
of brains. And there were a bunch up there. And the radiologist was there looking at them. And these two other radiologists walked in. And the one radiologist looking at the MRIs said, "Hey, guys, can you believe this brain is in that girl?"
Yeah.
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 It was pretty amazing.
That's thanks to the attention and the love that you've given her.
No, thank you.
Okay, so we had this tragedy. She was born, a stroke, blah, blah, in the children's hospital for weeks, and they finally cleared us to go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the three of us heading out to we did not know what.
Yeah.
Well, you've been really forthcoming, and I think people that haven't lived in this experience hopefully now have a little better grasp on what it's really like in the background when you see a parent out there, and hopefully it continues to soften society in a good way to be loving and kind and open as it has been becoming. So I just want to thank you for answering my questions and sharing such a personal side, and for having been a very important father to a very wonderful young woman.
Well, thank you very much. You're very kind. It's been a pleasure.
Me too.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You may be wondering how this fits into the arena of a public affairs show. It touches in at least a couple of places. there are men and women out there whose dreams have been dashed. And many of these people are submerged, taken out of the game. I think of all the people out there who have disabilities or are the parents of people with disabilities, and how many of them don't get to participate in a normal, mainstream life. Sometimes it feels like disabled people are treated as if they live on another planet. Whose loss is that?
As an epilogue to this interview, I'd like to address the work of a father's parenting. What you may not have heard about in this Q&A was what I saw watching Steve do as a parent, just a dad, hanging out with a daughter. He spent years at her side. They watched videos and sang along. He pulled her in her wagon with her beloved Bert and Ernie dolls, took her to the beach, played Frank Sinatra on the cassette player, and sang her to sleep on his chest. Oftentimes, he would put her on the back of his Vespa scooter just to give her a cool factor, dropping her off at school, because he thought she deserved it. They had their private jokes, quiet conversations under the tree in the backyard, lots of pushes in her swing. This is a stay-home dad. And interesting to note, our daughter has never been a boy-crazed teen or young woman. She hasn't sought approval from guys. Didn't party hard or dress to entice, no boozing or bar hopping. She became her real self and continues to be that all the time. And I think that having her father as a ready anchor of kindness and honest opinion was the balance needed. He knew she was something delicate, sweet, kind, courageous, virtuous, and he let her know it. His very presence at her side every day conveyed that as her at-home parent. And there is a difference between living it gently in everyday life versus tossing it out as a statement here and there. And I'm so grateful that he was present for her to live the love that he had to give. It certainly gave her confidence in the face of her challenges. And it helped us as a family to normalize the day to day. For those of you who are facing a medical unknown, if it helps, we started with no promises of any sort from the medical doctors. And I wish I knew then that time was our companion and not the enemy. Patience is a gift, and while we wait, may we experience many small miracles. May you be as blessed as we have been.